This fall, fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at MinkyCouture.com.
A radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's the Paul Gallant Show.
Pauly G Show. He's the best in Houston.
Houston's most interactive sports talk show.
Hey, how's it going, Paul?
Oh, what's good, my man?
How you doing, Paul?
What are you doing, Paul?
Join the conversation by dialing or texting 713-780-3776.
I love the show. Y'all keep it up.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
The most interactive sports talk show in Houston on an Ask Gallant Anything Friday. 713-780-3776 to call, to text, YouTube at ESPN Houston, Twitch at ESPN 975. Cowboys traded Micah Parsons to the Packers for two first-round picks and Kenny Clark. Texas, number one in the nation, kicks off their season tomorrow.
Texas is back, folks!
Against Ohio State at the Horseshoe in Columbus, Ohio. The game is pick'em, I'm seeing, per sports books that are out and about and do not pay me for their services.
You got the black lung?
Yes, I have the black lung in that the money I'm not getting from a sports book is giving me a black lung because I'm ripping cigarettes every single commercial break like the late Fred Fowler. Shout out to Fred. R.I.P., buddy. Anyway, you want to weigh in on those two things, you can. I'm very curious about tomorrow's Texas game. I do think Texas is going to win. I also think it's going to be a sloppy game. It's the first game of the year, and you got one quarterback going into a hostile environment to make his first like big-time start. And on the other hand, you got a freshman quarterback for Ohio State going in there. So ought to be an interesting game. I think, if anything, I might take the under for this game, if anything. But generally, when it comes to gambling, I'm very conservative. Except for tomorrow, where I will be picking Syracuse to outright win against Tennessee. Because F Tennessee, I hate that school. I hate their fans. I think they're the most insufferable group of fans that have, like, you think Aggies don't have a grasp on reality and realistic expectations? Like, Tennessee, the worst. No one's ever good enough for them. And that is a program that for sure is miserable that a black man was the one who could win a national title, where Peyton Manning, 0-4 against Florida, could not. I actually went back and I watched highlights from 1998, Tennessee's closest call that season, where they played against Syracuse. They were so close, Syracuse, to winning. Donovan McNabb had truly what was his Heisman moment, leading Syracuse down the field to be within field goal range. They kick a field goal to go up 30, I want to say it was 33-31 with about 2 minutes left, and Tennessee marched down the field. They kicked a 47-yard field goal. They won at the Carrier Dome, and that win helped Tennessee go undefeated and eventually win the national title. And we're going to get revenge for that tomorrow. We, he said, wearing his Otto's Army Syracuse football shirt. Anyway, though, college football's back. Some games were on last night. NFL, still 6 days away from the season kicking off next Thursday. The Micah Parsons-less Cowboys going on the road to take on the Philadelphia Eagles as they hang banner number 2. God, that's going to be a brutal day. That's going to be a brutal day for Cowboys fans. Your arch rival is hanging another banner, and you don't have Micah Parsons anymore. Woof. As far as the Houston Texans are concerned, I love this article every single year. Drew Maggery, who used to write for Deadspin, now writes for The Defector. I think he's one of the funniest writers that covers sports out there. Sadly, I don't read as much as I used to, and I don't really want to pay another website for a subscription. But every single build-up through football season, the last couple of weeks, Drew Maggery will write an article about why your team sucks. He does it for all 32 teams. He is a diabolical hater. And he did one this week about your Houston Texans. Yeah, let's get a little Clay Walker football time in Houston in the background as I read passages from Drew Maggery's piece, Why the Texans Suck. Bill O'Brien in the background, nice feedback. This team's whole existence has been one big could have. We got 1 year of the Texans looking like a capable NFL franchise. We were fools to assume we'd get any more than that. Ask the Bears, ask the Seahawks, ask the Jets. Your defense will always be respectable under this sort of coach like D'Amico Ryans, and your offense will always be as coherent as a snippet of Madam Web dialogue, that movie that bombed, that had Sydney Sweeney and that one girl from 50 Shades of Grey. It doesn't matter how good your quarterback is, even if his name is C.J. Stroud. Why Your Team Sucks from Drew Maggery, Texans Edition, continues. Your quarterback, C.J. Stroud, who got the will sacked out of him last season, was sacked so many times. In the Texans' inaugural campaign, David Carr was sacked a horrifying 76 times. You would have thought that year would have convinced Texans ownership, now embodied in the form of world-class dip bleep, Cal McNair, to manage that part of the roster more carefully. But remember, this is a team that willingly branded itself the Texans. Hey, Drew, that's not nice. Did you really expect brains to grow on trees here? Hey! Six times.
It's always fun to win.
Cal. Six times in their brief history, the Texans have allowed more than 50 sacks in a single season. Stroud had to absorb 52 of them last year, and his confidence was body snatched as a result. His yardage totals plummeted. His touchdown to interception ratio did as well. There's now a chance, unthinkable 12 months ago, that Carolina made the right choice in picking ventriloquist doll Bryce Young number one overall instead of Stroud. That's how badly things have gone for our friend in H-Town. Yeah, none of that's wrong. The fact that people are starting to wonder, wait, maybe Bryce Young not that bad? C.J. Stroud, woof. Probably the worst thing that happened. More from Drew Maggery's Why the Texans Suck article. Joe Mixon is already suffering from an undisclosed foot injury, which means that Houston will likely rely on free agent Nick Chubb as their primary yardage eater at the beginning of the season. Ah, yes, that famously durable Nick Chubb. This man could tear a ligament while making a bleeping Pop-Tart. Hey, he used to be durable. But yeah, the last 2 years have been a little bit rough. More from Drew Maggery. Safety Jimmy Ward, on the commissioner's exempt list, was recently arrested for assaulting the mother of his child. I thought that was legal in Texas. Huh, hey. First off, not cool. Second off, he was on meth, allegedly. What has always sucked, writes Drew Maggery in his Why the Texans Suck article. Ask any Houston resident, regardless of age, if they'd prefer to have the Oilers back instead of the Texans. In fact, ask them if they'd rather swap the Texans' entire franchise history with the Titans' franchise history since 1997 if it meant keeping the Oilers in Houston. All of them would say yes. All of them. Because what is there about the Texans that's worth holding on to? This organization's best coach ever was Gary Kubiak. Actually, it's Bill O'Brien, statistically. Get it right. That's probably D'Amico Ryans now. Man, he kept going. Its most accomplished quarterback was either Matt Schaub or a disgraced injury magnet, Deshaun Watson.
I mean, it's now Stroud. Most playoff wins in franchise history.
That's true. Fact. It's true. Oh, God, B-Mac. Its signature playoff win was 404 object not found. Yeah, I mean, you beat the Raiders with Connor Cook. You beat the Bengals multiple times.
With Dalton.
With Andy Dalton under center. You beat the Chargers. They're the Chargers. I think Drew wrote that only counts as 0.3 of a playoff win.
Josh Allen before he became good.
That's true with the Bills.
Yep.
Oh, God. Yeah. The Browns, but with Joe Flacco.
Yeah. and you lost 30-0 to the Chiefs when you had Brian Hoyer. You collapsed against the Chiefs a few years later.
They lost to the Colts.
The Colts spanked that ass. 21-7. 2018.
Watson looked so stupid in that game, and I remember saying it, and people got so mad at me and called me racist, just like they did when I asked last year. Hey, like, you sure DeMeco Ryans is going to be one of the best coaches in the NFL? Anyway, the article continues why your team sucks the Texans. Not only did the Titans have a better legacy than the Texans, but it's not even close. I don't know about that. I like J.J. Watt and Andre Johnson as much as any football fan, but it's been 24 years, man. That's all you've given us in that time span? You know how long it took the Jaguars and Panthers to make their conference titles after entering the league? 2 years. Yeah, it is kind of crazy. Panthers were 13-3 their second season. And they beat the Cowboys in the playoffs. Like, they ended. Like, that Cowboys.
That was the end of the run.
Doc, that ended the run. The Panthers even managed to win an NFC a couple of times. That's right. Lost to the Patriots and the Broncos in the Super Bowl since their founding. Meanwhile, the Texans' history is a bleeping desert. The crime you see now, it's hard to even take its measure. So bleep the very idea of this franchise. Bleep its name. Bleep its ownership. And bleep this entire, and bleep the entire Bush family with a 10-gallon hat. I didn't say that. Drew Magary wrote that. ICE is about to forcibly deport all of the people who make the city of Houston barely interesting. When the whole of the civilization collapses, I plan on eating you Texans first. Damn, dog.
Go Texas.
What might not suck? You've already met the rest of the AFC South. These guys are the one-eyed king in the land of the blind. Damn. Some fans wrote in this article why the Texans suck. The five key words to describe Texans are determined to be pride, courage, strength, tradition, and independence, each represented by a point on the Texas star. It was really important to Bob McNair that the color scheme have tremendous meaning, said Jamie Roots. All right, Jamie Roots. The Texas flag motif, the bull and the star, all came together to form the logo. In February of this year, our Tommy Boy owner had been on a bit of an image rehabilitation media blitz, and we actually started to believe that he and his wife were cool. Turns out it was a ploy to build goodwill before demanding public funding for replacing the barely two decades old NRG Stadium. Yep. You know your team is struggling for an identity when the official article on the Texas hand gesture has to specifically indicate how it's different, not stolen, from Texas's hand gesture. Right. There's hook 'em, and then there's H is up. The H is up tradition. Woo! So there you go. That's Drew Magary's why the Houston Texans suck. Woof. Anyway, so to ask along anything Friday, you can ask any question. 713-780-3776 to call, to text. YouTube at ESPN Houston. On Twitch at ESPN 975. 337, a texter asks, who's going to win the game, LSU or Clemson? On Sunday, guess what? Buckle up. We'll talk about it on the flip side. It's the Paul Gallant Show. We do our pick six next. Stay put.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
In 1930, the Republican-controlled House of Representatives, in an effort to
boring.
The effect of
time to put down the books and crack open a college football six-pack.
We're going streaking through the quad and into the gymnasium. Come on, everybody!
With Paul Gallant.
Let's do it.
Let's do it!
All right, guys. We're going to pick six games for this college football weekend, because football is officially back. The six best games of the weekend, and we pick them against the spread. Sean has offered his picks. BMAC, you can add your picks to the table as well. BMAC sitting in for Sean today because Sean was doing the fantasy football draft out in Lake Charles, Louisiana. 11 a.m. tomorrow on Fox. Judgment Day, at least for week one. Texas in the horseshoe taking on Ohio State. Big noon kickoff. The line when we made these picks was set at 1.5, but it has moved to even. But let's pick with the 1.5 Ohio State spread. The over-under for the game is 47.5. Bonus if you want to do the over-under. I think that Texas is going to win this game. I think it's going to be a close one. I think it's going to be a low-scoring game. And if I were to bet on anything in this game, I would bet on the under. But I do think Texas wins. BMAC behind the glass. What say you?
Yeah, I say Texas wins, and I also like the under as well. I think Texas wins by not a blowout, but comfortably a touchdown, and it hits the under.
Okay. 11 a.m. ABC. I will 100% at Kirby Ice House. I'll probably be there. I don't know. I'll be going to another bar. I will probably go up to at least one TV and say, hey, is the game on? Talking about Syracuse, Tennessee, which is the other big game that's taking place in the 11 a.m. window. Cuse had 10 wins last season.
Are you going to just say the game and like make them guess what it is?
The game. No, that's not the game. The game. It's on ABC. I'm sure the bartender will love that. I will tip well afterwards. Don't you worry. But Syracuse is a 13.5-point road dog taking on the Vols. Tennessee, a 13.5-point favorite. I think Tennessee's going to win. Kyle McCord is gone. Syracuse is replacing a lot of guys. And I am 100% picking with my heart for Syracuse to cover this spread. I don't feel that comfortable about it. But I do think that Syracuse head coach Fran Brown is saying all the right things. Apparently, he has just been playing Rocky Top nonstop all week at practice, so all the players hate it. I think Rocky Top's actually a banger. It's the one thing Tennessee has that's good. They probably are ungrateful for that, too, these ingrates. Terrible fan base. Toxic P-words online. But I think Tennessee's going to win. I just don't think they cover.
Yeah, I don't say this just to troll you, but it's at Rocky Top. I'm going to take Tennessee. And
what does that mean? They don't know where the stadium is. Points. They can't read directions. They can't read. These are cannibals.
If this wasn't a road game and they weren't breaking in a new quarterback, I think I would side with Cuse covering here. But I'm going to go Tennessee and take it.
I got it. I totally get it. 2:30 ABC. Alabama at Florida State. Bama, a 13.5-point favorite. Florida State, one of the most disappointing seasons, I think, that any college football team's had relative to expectations last year. And they got this Thomas Castellanos guy transferred in from Boston College who sucked. Like, Bill O'Brien benched him. And actually, there was a Boston
Doesn't matter, Brian.
Syracuse came last year where Castellanos, like, they just stopped throwing with him. And I think he even got benched. And Boston College ran for, I think, 300 yards on Syracuse. So, again, like, you know, Syracuse.
I watched him a few times last year. Dude could not throw.
He stinks.
And yeah.
This guy was talking trash to Alabama this offseason. Had he not talked that trash, I think I would pick Florida State to cover here. But, yeah, I think Bama's going to go in, and I think Bama's going to take a mallet and just bludgeon the Seminole into the ground.
Yeah, 100%. I agree with you. I mean, obviously, Florida State is coming off a way, way, way worse season. But let's not pretend that Alabama doesn't have something to prove, especially towards the end of the season when Oklahoma kicked their ass. Like, they want to prove that and the Vandy loss are a thing of the past, and they're moving forward in, you know, the Alabama that we remember. So I think Bama hammers them.
6 o'clock ESPN on Saturday. UTSA, the Roadrunners, heading to Kyle Field to take on the Texas A&M Aggies. I have not seen the Midnight Yell yet.
You didn't miss anything.
Those Roadrunners, we're going to be like Wile E. Coyote. If he actually was an engineer, fighting Texas Aggies, study at Texas A&M. Whoop!
Did you watch the Any Given Saturday doc on Netflix?
Is that the SEC one?
Yeah, yeah.
I did. I can't believe that they
There's
were showing
an episode like,
yes,
oh,
I saw.
Oh, yeah.
I saw it.
Didn't help.
I saw it, too. A&M's a 22.5-point favorite. Sean took UTSA to cover. I think that was a petty.
He's goal. A hater. Yeah.
I think A&M wins by the 22.5.
Same. I like Marcel Reed a lot. Now, obviously, he struggled in a few situations
People
last
say
year.
He can't throw, and he's aware of that.
He couldn't throw against Texas last year, but Texas defense was elite. I think UTSA can't handle that, though. Reed and the Aggies win and cover.
Okay. 6:30. This game is on Saturday. It is not on Sunday. A texter is asking, hey, is it on Sunday? No, because the Sunday game is Notre Dame and Miami, which we'll get to in a moment. ABC, number 9 LSU at number 4 Clemson. Clemson, 4.5-point favorites. Over-under for this game is 57.5. Sean took Clemson. A lot of people think Clemson is a legitimate national title contender. And Brian Kelly, with LSU, they have lost the first two openers. They have been massive disappointments in these first two openers. So a lot of people are jumping on the Clemson wagon.
First three, I think.
Is it three?
I think it's three in a row.
Three? Yeah, I think
for Kelly. I think five in a row overall, three with Kelly.
I shouldn't do this. And this is partly because I hate Clemson with every fiber of my being, a fake-ass religious school.
Is that a Dabo thing?
Yeah, I hate Dabo.
That's fair. I do, too.
I, like, legitimately cannot stand him. I think anyone... Like, they are one of those programs that uses the Bible to get into the homes of, I think, religious Southerners. And they've, like, weaponized that to recruit players. And I think that it's, like, all fake. So I really just... It rubs me the wrong way because Dabo's a bit of a televangelist. Brian Kelly sucks, too, for what it's worth, in this battle.
He's also fake.
The Tiger showdown between fake coaches in Death Valley. This is entirely petty because I hate Clemson. I'm taking LSU. I've always had a sweet spot for LSU, even with Brian Kelly running the show, because there's been a couple of great Patriots that played for LSU back in the day. Kevin Falk, shout out to him. Jarvis Green, amongst others. So I'm going to take LSU to win.
Oh, sorry about that. Yeah, I would take Clemson here. I'm with Sean. I think... obviously part of it's home field advantage. I do really like Garrett Nussmeier of LSU. I just don't trust Brian Kelly in these moments.
Yeah.
It's partly a gut feel thing with this, but I'll take Clemson to cover.
Okay. By the way, Kate Klubnik did not get in a car accident. And also Clemson, classic Clemson, ratted on former Cougs safety, now for LSU, A.J. Halsey, who got in a fight at the end of a game for the Cougs. It seems that he wasn't going to be suspended until someone made the SEC or I guess the ACC or someone aware of, hey, he's got to serve a half suspension, I think.
Yeah, two quarters.
So he's suspended the first
couple. Honestly, that's kind of part of it with LSU. Like, I don't trust that they're paying attention to details when they didn't know one of their big transfers should be suspended.
That is the LSU experience. It's the most talent and the most brain farts, like, simultaneously. And Brian Kelly has not changed that. Sunday, 6:30, ABC. Number 6, Notre Dame at number 10, Miami. Catholics versus the Convicts. I think Miami, without Cam Ward, is not the same Miami. I saw Syracuse beat Miami last year. I'm taking Notre Dame. Cheer for old Notre Dame. They are 2.5-point favorites against the spread. Sean took Miami. What say you, B-Mac?
Yeah, I could still see Notre Dame winning this. I mean, obviously the margin's small because it's only 2.5, but I'm going to take the side of the plus, the home team with the points, and I'll go Miami plus 2.5.
It is hot in Miami in the summer.
And obviously, Notre. I mean, Carson Beck, I mean, I don't know how much we trust him, but yeah, obviously sucks. Notre Dame also having to break in a new QB.
Carson Beck sucks. It's terrible. There you go.
I don't disagree. I don't disagree.
College football six back. Over! And, of course, there is a Monday game as well. We'll talk about that on Monday. Paul Galacho, ESPN 97.5, 713-780-3776 to call to text. YouTube at ESPN Houston and Twitch at ESPN 975. Stay there. First, let me tell you about my friends at Walmart. The Walmart you thought you knew, it's now new. 500 million items available online. You can find a huge selection that you can't find in stores. Think groceries cost more when they're delivered. At some stores, they do, not at Walmart. Grocery prices at Walmart are the same for delivery as they are in the store. And also, you already know Walmart's got low prices. They can also deliver to you in as fast as an hour. Use Express Delivery to get all the eligible things you need from Walmart, from groceries to home goods to prescriptions. When it comes to feeding your family, hosting a tailgate, or throwing a party, think Walmart for all your grocery needs. The Walmart you thought you knew is now new. Who knew? Walmart.com.
ESPN 97.5.
I assumed you knew.
The Paul Gallant Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
It's an Ask Gallant Anything Friday, 713-780-3776 to call to text. YouTube at ESPN Houston, Twitch at ESPN 975. Micah Parsons traded to the Packers after our show yesterday in exchange for two first-round picks. And Kenny Clark, a defensive tackle who is a three-time Pro Bowler. Parsons then signed a four-year, $188 million deal with Green Bay. It is the biggest deal in NFL history for a non-quarterback. We'll see how he does there. We'll see how the Packers do there. The Packers are now the fifth best odds to win the Super Bowl and are second in the NFC behind the Philadelphia Eagles. Let's get some of your Ask Gallant Anything questions in here. Wheatstraw asks on the 832, doing a little gambling here. Texas, Ohio State tomorrow. Over 1.5 touchdowns for Archie Manning? Two touchdown passes on the road. It's your first game under center. Just one touchdown pass? And they get in the red zone. Are they going to run? Is he going to run? I think I would take the under. I think this is going to be a rather low-scoring game. I think it's going to be ugly and sloppy at times, and I think Texas fans are going to be stressed for a lot of the afternoon, as will I, watching in solidarity with you, probably at the Kirby Ice House, the original one that's actually near Kirby. Now there's a bunch of Kirby Ice Houses all over the city, but they're not near Kirby Drive. What's up with that? From the 337, Paul, do you think LSU should fire Brian Kelly if they lose the season opener against Clemson? No, I don't. I think it'll be annoying, but LSU is always going to have a chance to play their way back into the college football playoff. That's what these expanded playoffs allow. You can puke on yourself, and still at the end of the year, even if you lose to Oklahoma and Vanderbilt, like Alabama did, you theoretically have a chance to get back in because people are, at the very least, going to talk about you having a strong case, you know? Like a team like Alabama, a team like LSU, they're going to get love that a team like South Carolina probably wouldn't, even though they're in the same conference, you know, and maybe have a better resume. But no, I think after the season, that would certainly be used as a reason. But, I mean, I think at this point, and I think I did this last year as well, like LSU has to win the opener at some point. And I don't know. With Clemson, not sure. From the 832, it's not his first game under center. Quit saying that stupid bleep. Yes, it is. It's against Ohio State. I'm sorry. The other games he played, they're not against Ohio State on the road. It's his first game as the starting quarterback where there's no possibility. Like, there's no pressure on him with Quinn Ewers in there. He steps in for Quinn Ewers and he doesn't do so well. They're going to put Quinn Ewers back in. So permission to treat you as hostile since you said it like that. This is basically his first game. I get that he's played games before. I get that he's started games before. Come on, man. All these expectations, back-to-back college football playoff experiences for Texas. This is their third year where they are a favorite, where they're considered back. Like, this is a huge game for him.
Yeah, I mean, technically, to the Texas point, it is his third start, but the first two were against a directional school and the worst school in the SEC, yeah. Mississippi State. So at the very least, you could treat it as his first real competition.
That's what I mean here. Yeah. Like the Mississippi State, like, yeah, as B-Mac said, like, kick him out of the SEC.
I mean, yeah, if you watch that documentary on Netflix, so you know how bad they were.
They stink.
They went winless in the SEC last year.
Woof. Woof, woof, woof. Mel Kiper had this to say about Texas, Ohio State tomorrow. 48 years I've been covering college football. Never remember a game as anticipated as this one. And he's very tan while he's talking about this. Honestly, I'm a little alarmed looking at him on camera here. Oh, my God. It looks like he's on fast forward or something like this. My man, Mel. Either you do this, you have a little less pumpkin pie, or what you do is you tone it down a little bit. This game is exciting. Is it that exciting? I don't know about that. Also from the 409. Not a real popular take, but this could be a huge setback for Texas, especially if they get blown out in the horseshoe. I mean, you lose the first game of the season. That's not good. But this is, for Texas, one of those games where, hey, whatever happens, happens, you know? Anyway, it is the Paul Gallant Show. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, 713-780-3776 to call to text. And joining us in studio right now, our Houston Astros front office insider, the man, the myth, the legend, the very big, the kind of late, Jeremy Booth. It's been a long day.
Yeah, it was interesting getting out of there.
I feel you. I feel you on that. All right, so it finally happened.
Kind of late. Wait, hold on. Kind of late. I'm real late.
It's fine. Okay. It's fine. All right. The Astros have finally done what you've wanted for a while.
Hit Alvarez second?
Well, that, but also...
I don't want that.
Lance McCullers out of the bullpen.
Oh.
At least for the short term.
Sounds oddly prescient.
I figured you'd be doing a victory lap coming in here today.
It's... Yeah, a little bit. he's made reliever. He's a born reliever. Some guys can do it, and that's where they need the help from him. If he's going to contribute, he needs to be in the bullpen. No better time than right now, right? We don't need to try to work him back into the rotation because Lance says he's a starter. You know what Lance McCullers is? He's a winner. I've kept that out the entire time. Lance McCullers is a winning player. If you're a winning player, you want to help the club win. The best way you help this club win now and in the future, because the past is gone, can't go back and get that, is out of the bullpen. And so I'm glad to see he's doing that.
What's a realistic expectation for him these next couple of weeks? Because it seems the way Joe Espada framed it, like it's a trial, that it's not necessarily going to stay this way. And maybe that's how you frame it, because you don't want to step on the toes of your veterans who all have egos, and he obviously wants to start. How do you handle this? Because I'm sure there will be some growing pains in this role after not having been in it for such a long time.
First of all, Joe's saying the right thing. You say it's a trial because this is somebody that has the organization and Lance have adamantly said the starter. Right? Forever. He's a starter. He's a starter. He's a starter. He's a starter. They have no choice. They can't just immediately go in and say, oh man, yeah, he's back in the, he's in the bullpen now where he belongs. Can't do that. Internally, I strongly doubt that this hasn't been discussed for years, regardless of the front office, right? It was discussed in the draft. So I know it's been discussed for years. And so for the optics of we're going to go forward and see how it works, I think that's probably a good way to approach it. That said, every third day, no more than two innings, recovery time, back out again. What that means is if he pitches on Friday, he doesn't throw again until Monday unless there's an off day, then maybe it's an inning on Sunday.
Okay, that makes sense, because I figured that would be the trickiest thing for him. He does seem routine-oriented, and maybe that's the reason he wants to stay a starter more than just ego, is, hey, I at the very least know when I'm pitching, I can manage my body in the short term. But you do want him a month from now, given the limitations of the Astros bullpen, with Josh Hader likely not coming back and with Brian Abreu being asked to do a lot, you need somebody else to step up. And I look at the rest of this bullpen, and I know some of these guys have done a pretty damn good job, all things considered, for stretches of this year, whether it's Brian King or Benet Sousa, amongst others. But you need somebody else in there.
If with that, let's assume for a second that Hader's healthy. He's not. Let's assume that he is. Okay. If I gave you McCullers in the seventh, Abreu in the eighth, and Hader in the ninth, are you happy?
I don't know. I don't know with McCullers. I really need to see it. I mean, I know what you clearly see it. You clearly see him as a bullpen guy. For me, I just, the consistency. You know, like when he has that one inning where the balls start coming. Because every now and then he'll have an inning and you're like, oh God, he's all over the place for this inning. And it was I think it was his last outing where like he had one of those, and you could tell as he was getting off the mound, he was really pumped up, getting out of that jam. But he put himself in that jam. And I feel like with Lance, how do you avoid doing that if that's something that you do when you're coming in for maybe one inning, two innings at a time?
Well, relievers have routines too. They've always had routines. It's just different than starter routines. But if somebody's as routine-oriented as a Lance McCullers, giving him the seventh, this is your inning, when we have a lead, this is your inning. That's how he knows, right? The Astros starting rotation as it sits today, even with the warts, even with the injury returns, with all the stuff that we've got with this club, should be good enough to get them through six. It really should. With the offense and the rotation, they should be able to get through six. Where they have problems now is going to be extending those games and having the innings pile up on the rotation past that point in time. So if Hader's down, maybe it's the carousel that we just talked about in the seventh, the Sousas and the by committee, right?
Right.
And then you have McCullers in the eighth and Abreu gets the ninth. You're in a lockdown situation. They know how to prepare. And then you roll into next year, and now McCullers has the seventh and eighth and ninth, right? You see what I'm saying? So
yeah.
you have the right type of transition where you can extend Lance McCullers' career. And Lance, I know that you're really good at listening to the media and also tuning it out, and that's a good thing. I will say this. John Smoltz is a Hall of Famer, okay? And John Smoltz was a starting pitcher for a long time, had injuries, one injury in particular, and Tommy John came back as a reliever and then finished up as a starter. And there's nothing wrong with doing that. It's not an ego bump in today's day and age to come in and know the seventh inning is yours. That's a pretty significant deal. You can't go back and get it yesterday. You have to go forward today. The Astros need this type of arm in the bullpen right now. They need this reinforcement. And he's the type, right guy to give it. You know, if you look at the innings load he's had over years, over time, we've talked about this on this channel, we've talked about this offline, we've talked about this elsewhere, it's minimal, man. He threw 120 innings and shuts it down for 2.5 years. You can't do that this time. You got to go out and you got to pitch. So I think it's a win for the club. I think it's a win for the Astros as a whole. And win for Lance McCullers, man. It's about time. It's overdue. It's about time.
He is Jeremy Booth. He is our Houston Astros front office insider. We've talked so much about Lance McCullers this year, so now we actually see him in a prominent role going forward. We'll see if he actually thrives in this trial, as Joe Spada is framing it. So, Yordan Alvarez is back, and we all know that you've got some thoughts on lineup tinkering. You want it a very specific way. For those who maybe haven't heard you before, now that Yordan is back and you have Carlos Correa aboard, you don't have Isak Paredes anymore, Cam Smith's hanging around, and hey, at the very least, he had a home run this week after a very long drought. How do you want this lineup to look for the final month of the year?
Well, Pena's got to still hit one.
Okay.
Altuve's got to hit two.
Altuve in the two spot. Okay.
Yeah. I hit Altuve too. The reason why is because I want Pena to be able to steal bases, and I also want Altuve with extra base ability to be able to drive in Pena from first.
Okay.
Right? And if Altuve is on first base and Pena scores, Altuve can steal bases too. I got more shots, right? Correa's not going to run much at all, so he's going to hit four. Alvarez is going to hit three. Okay?
Okay.
That's how I've got this balance. I don't want three guys in the order right-handed.
So we've talked about this before. Yordan loves to see things before he steps in. Does that allow him to still see things if he's coming up after Altuve, who's going to jump and swing at stuff from time to time?
In my perfect lineup, he's hitting fourth because he's in a position to hit and hit for power and to hit with two outs for power, right? In the analytical lineup, that's two spots too late. They're not going to hit him there because he's going to be the best hitter and they're going to want to hit him second. And they lose when they do that. And we've seen that, okay? But if you're splitting hairs and you decide you're going to find a middle ground, you've got enough one and two guys where you can still make the case for Pena and Altuve, and then Alvarez hits third. Now, again, without the three right-handed hitters, because Correa, Pena, Altuve, Correa, and Arroyo bothered me. They just do. They bothered me when it was Springer, Correa, or Springer, Altuve, Correa. That bothered me. You know what I mean? Or Bregman.
Not to take you off track. What about it bothered you about them?
Because it's too easy to pitch to.
Gotcha. Okay.
You know, from a specialty type standpoint.
Okay. Keep going.
Those are hitters that don't have gigantic splits on any given year as far as against right left, but it's just a lot of right-handed bats in a row in the top of the order. So I'd like to have Alvarez in third, Correa hitting fourth. We said Paredes is out, right?
Yeah, I think so. I saw some Instagram posts, and a lot of people were getting excited about it. Someone had posted out for the season, and he reposted it saying, coming soon. Take your time, man, especially with these barber surgeons on the training staff.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Is they tell you it's 2 weeks and it's 7 months. I mean, you don't know. You know what I mean?
So leg falls off.
Alvarez's hand didn't need to be imaging. 100 games later, we're back.
Whoops, we euthanized you instead of giving you an injection. My bad.
So, you know, Man, you know, I think after that it becomes about, I hate to say this, but who's hot? You know, Walker's going to hit in the five hole for me. Maybe Diaz is in the six hole. Sometimes you can flip them depending who they're facing.
That's the other thing with Yonder. Speaking of injuries, Yonder Diaz is dealing with some hand discomfort.
Yeah, so see you in 26, buddy.
Yeah, so okay. He's going to have a hook on
so,
his hand.
Yeah, so Walker five, and then, you know, from there, maybe Sanchez six. Whoever's catching, if it's Salazar or Caratini, he's going to hit in that bottom third somewhere. Myers. Got to hit somewhere in that bottom third to turn the lineup over. Who am I missing? Left fielder?
If Myers is back. So, yeah, I guess whoever's in left field, which has been a lot of Mauricio Dubon of late.
Which is exactly – why does it always take for, you know, 5 months to get this guy in the lineup?
Dubon just does not get the kind of respect that I think he is due, given what he has done. Like, he's always been consistent.
But when you need the dude, you run him out there and find nine positions to play him at. I don't understand. I don't get it.
It is funny.
So, you know, Dubon's in that bottom three. And I'd hit Dubon probably eight. I would probably hit the catcher seven, and I'd hit Myers nine.
Okay. Jeremy Booth, our Houston Astros front office insider. Christian Walker hit a home run yesterday.
He was
back
to
back with Altuve. this is just a fun question. Because you got to go T right now. Like you played ball back in the day.
I've been on a field before.
Did you ever jazz up your look? Because you were slumping. Because I don't know why Christian Walker decided to go clean shaven, but a lot of people are like, hey, what are you doing right here? Oh, you're pausing. This is a slow pause. This is, do you not want to admit what you did? What did you do?
You know...
not a Prince Albert.
No, not that. You know, let's say this. People try a lot of different things to... to get out of funks.
Yeah. And break I know. Slumps. I'm fascinated by it.
Yeah, and break slumps.
Hat for bats.
And, you know,
Pedro
facial
Serrano.
Hair is one thing.
Yeah.
You know, dyeing your hair is another thing.
Okay.
Certain meals are another thing.
Okay.
Changing up your approach is a certain thing. You know, clearing your eyes.
Such a slow build.
Yeah.
What did you do?
You know, I at one time I decided, listen, we all have our own things. The answer's yes, okay?
Yes. Oh, you tease.
Yeah, we've done things. Everybody's done something to break up a slump.
If you don't want to share it, you don't have to share it. But now I'm left feeling like Robert Pattinson, Batman with the Riddler, as he's singing.
Something's got to stick
okay.
in the book.
Okay, that's fair.
I will say this. Everybody's done something to break up a slump. You know, for me, lots of times it was changing a routine.
Okay.
Or showing up the ballpark different. Or, okay. You know, wearing different socks. I mean, something small like that, okay. You know? I didn't have facial hair back then. I didn't. For whatever reason, didn't occur to me. But I do understand, you know, something like that just to feel different. You know, you want to feel different when you go to the yard. Most times, guys will find a way to blow off steam. And if you blow off steam, whether it's hanging out with your teammates, whether it's going to a movie, stepping away, talking to people at home, that's usually how you do it. This may have been more funny than anything else. I mean, you know, for Christian Walker to do that. But everybody's got to find a way to break up for 2 for 20 or a 3 for 40 or whatever it is. It happens. They're not fun when you go through them.
One last easy series for the Astros before the schedule gets a little bit more difficult. You got four games against the Angels before, three against the Yankees, three against Texas, and then three against the Blue Jays, the last six of those games on the road.
So what you're telling me is that weakest part of the schedule that they had, we talked about, they kind of just, you know, screwed that part off.
I think that as far as the Detroit series, yes, and the first Baltimore series, yes. But the last two series, hey, they won 3 or 4 against Baltimore. They won 2 or 3 against the Rockies. The problem is the Mariners, who had their most difficult stretch, have just gotten through it. And if you take a look at the two schedules the rest of the way, and this will be our last question, the Mariners definitely have an easier schedule for the next couple of weeks than the Astros do. With the Astros a game and a half up on the Mariners, do you think they can hold them off? We're going to play time capsule here, obviously, a month left of baseball.
Let me say this. The Astros get into the playoffs. Let's say that, okay? I don't like the schedule the way they're playing, although the Astros, this team in particular, actually, let me say this another way, this organization historically in the last decade has played to their competition. So this team seems to be no different. I don't know what that's about, but they play bad baseball against bad teams, and they play good baseball against really good teams. And
they have the worst record among playoff teams against sub 500 teams this season.
That's right. It's amazing how they do that. And so with that trend, I have hope for the for them to win the division because I feel like they're going to, you know, step up and play hard against the teams that are there. Where I always get concerned is that good teams are good teams for a reason, right? And if you have to ask me if I want to face the Mariners' arms at any point in time during the season, the answer is unequivocally no. I don't want to do that. I'd rather face almost anybody else than what the Mariners have built on the mound. Okay, if you're asking me if I want to face the Tigers at any point in time, just they're a very dangerous team. The answer is no. And the Blue Jays, if the Blue Jays are really clicking the way with their talent they are, there's nobody better in the game right now.
That's a bold statement.
Well, I've seen them seven times.
I know.
I don't know how I ran into them seven times, but I saw them seven
times. Okay, so you like this team a lot.
I watch what the club can be. I've seen them from the field level. I've seen them right behind home plate. I've seen them in spring training. I saw this club as a whole, just like I saw the Astros.
Mm-hmm.
And what I see different out of the Blue Jays and the Astros, if there is a mentality, is that the Blue Jays clearly do not care. Not that they don't care if they win or lose. They don't care where they are. They're coming for you 100% of the time. Where Correa can really help this club is to get that back in here. Because Correa had that attitude. And Altuve is great at it, but it can't just be Jose. Where we don't have tomorrow, man. We got to win right now. Tomorrow ain't going to be here. Let's go right now. And that was one of the things that he did and Springer did. And the pitching staff that's been out of here, Keuchel was that way.
Right.
Verlander was that way. They've been missing that. So the answer to your question, long way of saying that, is they can hold them off because of who they're going to play. But it's going to be a very aggressive month and a lot of fun baseball in the next 30 days.
All right, we'll see what happens. Always appreciate Jeremy Booth, our Houston Astros front office insider, coming in. FutureStarSeries.com. Big thanks to BMAC and for Sean Mapes today. I am merely Paul Gallant. So long, farewell. Have yourselves a wonderful weekend. The Killer Bees are up next. Peace!
Houston's only FM sports stations, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.